Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today, over the next half hour, we're going to be taking a look at three news stories that have crossed our international education news feeds in the last 10 days, and we'll be taking a look at how your feedback can help inform what we do in international education. And wanted to say first, before we begin, a shout out to those of you who have been watching on the live feed over the last few months, as well as those who are listening in and subscribing on the podcast. I really appreciate you being with us each week, and it really makes a difference for me seeing the subscriber numbers grow and the views of these videos each week increasing. So thank you so much. It's glad to know that I'm being of service to my fellow international educators. So I hope you can join me today for this episode where we'll take a look at three important stories that have crossed our news feeds. And for those of you who are not familiar with how we work at SMIE Consulting, every Monday we produce a newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And in that we compile both social media as well as international education news stories that are a roundup with our takes on how these stories particularly have implications for what we do in international education. Noha, thank you for joining me. Hope all is well in Egypt. And looking forward to any contributions you make to the discussion today. But the newsletter that I produce each week goes out Monday mornings, 9 a.m. Eastern. And then we pick three of those news stories each week to go into this week's midweek roundup. And this is where we feature a lot of kind of the more in-depth analysis of the news stories and how they might impact what we do in international education here in the United States. So as always, you can subscribe to the newsletter for free, place the link to the most recent edition in the comments section on the Facebook page. Please feel free to subscribe there to that newsletter so you get that each week and maybe get a sense of what we might be covering here in the Midweek Roundup on Wednesdays. And also these videos from the Midweek Roundup are archived here on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting, as well as on our YouTube channel of the same name. So first up today, we're going to talk about Iran, a very topical news story today with what's happened in the Middle East. Krista, nice to see you. Hope you're well. And always a pleasure to see you on Sundays. First up, we're going to start with an article about what's happened with Iranian students. For those who are in international education, you know that obviously the U.S. does not have an embassy presence in the country of Iran and hasn't had since 1980 when the embassy was taken over by Iranian revolutionaries who have now since that time in 1979-80 been in charge of the country. Since that time, without a presence in Iran for students or anyone to apply for U.S. visas, Iranians have had to travel outside the country to U.S. consulate outside to apply for visas. What that's meant for most students that are looking to come to the United States has been going to either Ankara, Turkey, Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, or Yerevan, Armenia. Those have been the three countries that are currently available, or were up until this past week, available for Iranian citizens to apply for U.S. visas for their interviews. And for those who are familiar, every student visa applicant is required to appear in person for an interview with a consular officer. So up until now, those Iranian students have had to go to either Yerevan, Dubai, or Ankara, three neighboring countries, for visa appointments. Unfortunately, due to events this past week in Iran and Iraq, obviously, where their tensions have obviously been ratcheted up due to missile strikes and taking out of Iranian Al-Quds general, and that's led to obviously a lot of political tension, but also tension on the ground, And the embassy, U.S. Embassy in Yerevan announced Tuesday this past week that they are suspending services for U.S. visa applicants from Iran due to recent events. And that has led to many Iranian students and visa applicants that were already in a very, very uncertain state now having to wait until the embassy reopens services for Iranians, but also or going to a different embassy, either in Ankara or Dubai, which fortunately are still open and available for Iranian visa applicants. But those that had already or had scheduled interviews had them canceled, both student, non-immigrant visa applicants, as well as immigrant applicants, had their visas canceled or visa appointments canceled. And this is on top of obviously already troubling times for Iranians trying to come to the United States for any purpose, really. There has been since January of 2017 an effective travel ban on certain categories of Iranians that were looking to and other countries looking to come to the United States. There were exemptions carved out for students that they were then still allowed to apply for visa applications and interviews at U.S. embassies at the three that we've mentioned. However, the reality on the ground has been that these applicants have who have even been granted visas, many of which were having months and months of delay to even get their appointments, and having very patient international offices and admission offices working with them to issue new I-20s so they can go for new visa appointments to allow them to try and make the next intake. But for many of these Iranians that are coming for graduate studies, many institutions only have intakes, particularly for doctoral programs, once a year. So that has led many of them to delay their plans 1 year, 2 year, or more. There have been students that were caught outside the United States after the travel ban was imposed that still haven't been able to get back in, and other Iranians that had family or that are living in the United States with family in the U.S. haven't been able to get back into the country since that January 2017 travel ban was laid down. That is particularly worrying, obviously, for students that have already waited months. We had the stories in over the summer for a group of Iranians that were coming for doctoral programs at various UC schools. There were a dozen or so that had received visas, were in transit to or about to get on planes to come to the United States, who were told by officials, DHS officials that do meet overseas flights that are coming to the United States, that were told not to board, that your visas have been canceled. And that is obviously a very troubling circumstance when that was happening this past summer for new groups of students that were coming in. But now we have this on top of what's already happened. Iranian students that had already been admitted again, had been issued I-20s, who were looking to go to get their visa appointments done for January entrance, or even maybe May entrance now, or summer entrance perhaps. They are now in Yerevan, Armenia, now being told, sorry, we can't, we're not processing your, we're not going to be able to have your visa interview. So it's one of only, again, the embassy in Yerevan was one of only three that was, that were able to interview Iranians who are residents of Iran. That is important distinction, obviously, with now only Ankara and Turkey and Dubai and the Arab Emirates available to do that. This news outlet that is reporting this, Davis Enterprise, has received information, documents from five Iranian nationals, four students, and one immigrant visa applicant showing their appointments were canceled. Their visa interview dates indicate appointments at least through January 17th had been suspended. So any of those that were looking to come for spring classes here in the U.S., their window is closed, unless they were able to go to Dubai or Ankara for another appointment. But to get one at this late date as a student is unfortunately probably not a reality. So that's really been a challenge now, and apparently the embassy will reschedule, in Yerevan will reschedule any immigrants who had applied for visa appointments. They will reschedule those individuals for appointments, but the non-immigrants, the student visa applicants, will still have to will have to do that again once appointments are reopened. And again, it's no easy feat to travel from Iran to Armenia or to any of the other countries, and to stay at a hotel for weeks or months at a time waiting for an appointment. So they've already gone through a heck of a lot to get there. So it's really unfortunate that it's come to this, and hopefully we'll see some resolution of that soon. We'll stay in the region, and we'll go now for our second story to Saudi Arabia. And everyone in international admissions certainly knows, and international student services, that the Saudi Arabian scholarship programs, the government-sponsored students, that there were tremendous waves from the mid-2000s, post 9/11, through to the mid-teens, where when all of a sudden the King, as King Abdullah Scholarship Program, renamed the guardians of the two holy mosques scholarship, has been changed, severely curtailed, led to a lot of problems on campuses that had relied heavily on international students from Saudi Arabia to bolster their numbers and their pocketbooks, and those numbers have not rebounded at all. So students coming from Saudi Arabia have, there's been declines last 3 years as a result in the open doors numbers. We've certainly seen that. Rima, good to see you joining in, as always. Hope you're well. With regards to Saudi Arabia, the trends have typically been students coming from Saudi have been business or engineering or other STEM fields. And the liberal arts colleges amongst us, the many of us who recruit internationally, always lamented the never able to get a piece of that Saudi Arabian scholarship pie. And now the door may be open to that. The Saudi Arabian Cultural Ministry has introduced a program that was launched late December that will provide scholarships to male and female students who want to study culture and arts courses at international institutions. Well, that's encouraging. So these are courses that fall under the courses that are included include archaeology, design, museums, music, theater, filmmaking, literature, visual arts, culinary arts, and they can be taken at bachelor's, master's, or PhD level. So that's really encouraging, I think, to see that. And if you're looking for more details, this is from a Pi News article. Just posted the link to it in the comments section on the Facebook page. It's encouraging to see that there, and again, it's maybe a clue that this is coming out of the cultural ministry rather than the Ministry of Education, that has been where the lion's share of scholarships have come in the past. So this is, again, the aims of this program are to develop Saudi culture, to make meet growing labor market needs, which we could have told them 15, 20 years ago when they started this program. It's not just the engineers and the businessmen you need. And it's you need, if you're looking to develop your country as a destination, as a resource, then you need all these other things as well. Those conversations happened from many of us on trips to the Saudi Arabian Cultural Mission in D.C. or Fairfax, where whichever location you were fortunate enough to visit over time. But it's encouraging to see that that's happening, that Saudi Arabian students are now being given other options to pursue higher ed outside the country. And it's a key indicator that the country realized that they couldn't, and leadership realized in the country that they couldn't produce the kind of talent that they needed on their own. They needed the expertise from overseas institutions, and that's encouraging. So hopefully this will mean there's no real idea on what the numbers are involved here, but it's always hard to say, and it's always a moving target with these. But we'll keep our fingers on the pulse of this story as it develops. As part of that article, there's also some information here from IDP Education that it does track through their IDP platform and Hot Courses sites that there has been spikes in Saudi students searching for creative arts courses on those platforms since the announcement of this new scholarship program. So that's been a good barometer of student interest. The IDP sites and hot courses sites also rightly predicted that once the announcement was made, it's not huge rocket science involved here, but after the announcement of the two-year post-study work visa reintroduction in the UK, there were huge spikes there across the globe for study interest in the UK, and that's led to an increase again this fall in student intakes there. So the IDP data is kind of the real-time data that we all look for to see if these how trends are moving. And it doesn't go into details in this report as to where the interest is looking, but just the fact that they're looking for these courses connected to scholarship opportunities is a good sign. So we'll keep our eyes on that one for you as well as the days and weeks progress. Alan, good to see you on board out in California. Hope all is well with you. With regard to the Saudi Arabian scholarship program, that this new introduction of the cultural component, I think, will cultural scholarship out of the Ministry of Culture will give hope to some of the liberal arts programs that maybe you've always said, oh, I wish we could get more international students into these. This might be a way to get some scholarship students into that. Certainly making yourselves known for which of your programs might fit this new Ministry of Culture scholarship, making those known to your colleagues at the Cultural Mission for Saudi Arabia in the D.C. area would be a wise move. And if you haven't already, don't have regular visits there, certainly would be wise to make that a part of your embassy outreach as you do it. So last up today, we're going to do something a little bit different. It's an article our friends over at INTED put out this about a week ago, and it's related to what they call what's your recruiting superpower. And they do that in context, obviously, getting Avengers and DC Comics and all the fans out there in the world that have spent millions and billions of dollars watching their movies, trying to put that in context to what we do in international admissions and international student recruitment in general. And they take a very humorous look at it, and with actually very practical and insightful divisions of what skills you really need. And that's the way I want to kind of wrap up with today's talk today. When we talk about our international student recruitment efforts at our institutions, if you're an all-in-one office where you do recruitment, advising, programming, orientation, and as well as the applications, if you're doing that all in one office, then you may have people that you can place into these different categories. If you're a one person office, maybe you wear all of these hats, where in terms of the skill set that you need to be a real success in what you do with international student recruitment. So I won't go into all the services that INTED provides. They don't really document this or use this piece as a way to leverage that, but they do help talk about what are the skill sets that are really important at the different stages of the international student enrollment process. And I think that's something that we all need to be cognizant of, is it's not just about getting the applications in or getting students to apply. It's about making sure you're focused on the details. It's also focused about establishing the relationships and developing the students to the point where they feel that they're going to be successful on your campus after they've applied and been admitted. Those are really critical pieces that, I mean, ideally we think we all have those abilities. If we're in international admissions, we sort of need that to one degree or another. But I think what the way they portrayed these three skills for international student admissions, international student recruitment, and enrollment are things that I think are very well worth reviewing if you have a team of people that are involved in what you do, about what your focus needs to be on at the different stages of the recruitment process. So I think for my perspective, we're talking here about who's going to go out there and generate the interest and get students to hopefully apply, who's going to help those students through the application process, and who's going to be there for them after they're admitted to help them get ready for campus life, to get them enrolled and oriented properly? What kind of skills do you need to have? And the way the team at INTED describes them is there are three kinds of people that are needed. The recruitment heroes, which they distinguish by having magnetic marketing ability. And that's about, you know, encouraging students to inquire, student inquiries to apply and to develop them into high quality leads for the institution. The creating the content that's needed for audiences that you want your message to get in front of. So it's digital media. It's web content. It's also ones that are sent out abroad to go to fairs, to go to high schools, that they're good in front of people, that they have that kind of energy and ease of personality where they can talk to anyone and be authentic and be engaging with your students, with counselors, with partners overseas, agents that you might be working with, Education USA offices you might be visiting, to have that kind of personality that kind of is as engaging as it can be to attract the kinds of prospects, the kinds of students you want to your institution. So that's really an important piece, that front end of the admissions cycle, the admissions funnel, as we used to call it. So what skill sets do you need to have? Obviously that outgoing personality, the knowledge of your institution, the friendliness, the knowledge and skill set, if you're particularly talking the website of things, of IT and digital fluency, whether it's through social media, whether it's through creating the content for posts or email messaging, whatever it might be, that's a piece that person needs to be able to communicate those messages as well to intended audiences. So I think that's an important piece of the puzzle there. Next up, we have at the application hero cycle, they call it, for the folks at INTED, they call it the eagle-eyed engagers. And this is about the conversion process, you know, converting those best fit students who have decided to apply. So what kind of skills do you need there? The INTED folks say it's strong cross-cultural sensitivity, wanting to be engaged in student outreach, encouraging the engaging piece where some of those same skills as the marketing magnets had, you want these people to have, make the process for students as simple as possible, to make it as stress-free as possible. Not always an easy task, but one certainly these application heroes who have strong organizational skills, who really understand, can speak to where the students are coming from and say, I know this is what we're looking for from your country. This is what we're going to do with your information. This is why we need the financial documents. So it's to make things clear and as stress-free as possible. So kind of the nurturing types. So for the final stage that is identified for this article, INTED folks call them the enrollment heroes, or magical mentors, as they say. So these are students at this point that you're dealing with. They've been recruited, they've been applied, they've been admitted, but now and the reality is this is probably where the rubber hits the road for many offices. You can do everything right on the front end, getting applications into the funnel, getting people to complete, but after they're admitted, just because they're admitted doesn't mean they're coming. And this is something that I think too many institutions lose sight of. At this stage, that it's really where between that time of admission and the time of orientation and arrival, that these are the most important times, weeks and months that you have to convert that student and to make them a student of your campus, to have them identify as a student who will be a future graduate of your institution. So this is really the people who are the skills that you really need to have at this stage, apparently, and I agree with INTED's conclusions here, is that they really need to be helping to paint that final picture for students of what it's going to be like for them on campus those first few days and weeks, and how the orientation program is going to go. Hey, we're going to pick you up at the airport. Hey, we have this week-long or month-long or year-long orientation program for international students that are new to campus, and we want to make sure you're settled in. We're going to have people helping you find housing if you don't already have it settled. We're going to have academic advisors that will do this, international advisors that will do help you with immigration pieces and health insurance and all these other wonderful things that are involved in the student process. So the common theme at all of these stages really is the ability to communicate effectively and across cultures. Because as we all know, how we define things in the United States for our international students, for domestic students coming to our colleges, is a very different thing, or should be a very different thing, than how we define it and engage in with prospective students, you know, from overseas. Because they have a very different set of needs, a very different perspective on what it's going to be like for them. They don't have the context, frankly, unless they've already lived in the United States or attending other schools, high schools or boarding schools or community colleges in the U.S., they won't have the perspective to know what it's going to be like for them. And you have to paint that for them. And that's the importance of communication throughout the enrollment cycle, is really what will set the average international offices from the amazing international offices in terms of how well you're able to communicate those things, those messages you have, and the realities of life on campus and about the admissions process and about your school in general, that they need to know. And again, they don't know what they don't know, but it's your job as an international admissions rep to help get there. So hopefully this will give you a perspective, and I do recommend at least reading the article from INTED. That'll give you some perspectives on what they're really talking about at the different stages. So from my perspective, that's all we have this week for the midweek roundup. And again, thanks to those that are subscribing on the podcast, available on Google Play, iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and Spotify. You can subscribe on any of those platforms. Or for those of you that watch it live or on demand on YouTube or our Facebook page. Thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to catching up with you next Wednesday. Cheers.